Yeah. Come you are us. So much fun, Audrey. You should come to the meetings just to hang out with Audrey.
Anyway, I just want to say thank you all. Thank you for being here, Andrea.
Thank you thank for you inviting so me. And hopefully I'll come back soon. This was great.
Okay.
Right. I love our
talk. We're here. We're building a movement.
Building a movement. Mm-hmm. Thank you all for listening this evening.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
In 1964, a handful of determined classical music and jazz enthusiasts put their passion and engineering skills together to create Portland, Oregon's first community radio station. 4 years later, in 1968, KABU was born. After 48 years, KABU Community Radio is still very much a thriving media hub for Portland and beyond. 2018 will mark 50 years, and KABU is planning a long line of celebrations now. We need your help. Our top four goals to get started are fundraising, Oregon Historical Society exhibit building, sharing stories in history, and events in celebration. For more information, contact volunteer at kboo.org or Armando Gonzalez at mandosmundo@yahoo.com. We look forward to your help.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see some bad. But I'm just a soul whose intentions are good.
Good evening. This is Prison Pipeline on KBOO 90.7 FM Portland. I'm Doug McVeigh. Prison Pipeline presents a unique perspective of the criminal justice system, addressing the root causes of crime and broadening understanding of the institution of incarceration.
Anthony Papa is an artist, writer, freedom fighter, noted advocate against the war on drugs, and co-founder of the Mothers of the New York Disappeared. Mr. Papa's stinging opinion pieces about the drug war have appeared in news sources across the country. He's a frequent public speaker and college lecturer on both his art and on criminal justice issues. Currently, he's manager of media and artist relations for the Drug Policy Alliance. Tony is the author of This Side of Freedom, Life After Clemency, his second memoir about his 18 years of freedom after imprisonment. Tony, could you tell my listeners your story?
Well, basically in 1985, I made a big mistake. I got involved with drug activity. I was bowling in a team in Yonkers, New York, and I kept coming late to the league, and the teammate said, "Hey, why are you coming late to the league?" Because my car kept breaking down. I said, "Well, why don't you fix it?" I had no money. So he said, "Well, you want to make some money?" He introduced me to a guy who was actually dealing cocaine in the bowling alleys in Westchester County. I met him, he started talking to me, he asked me if he wanted to make money. At first, I said no, I didn't want to get involved. So a couple of months later, when it was like near Christmas time, things got slow, my business, I owned a radio installations, a business, I needed money for rent, Christmas gifts. Things got bad and desperate. And when things get desperate, you do stupid things. Guy wound up calling me up again. He asked me if I wanted to make some money. This time I said, yeah. So like a carrot dangling on the string, he says, look, bring this envelope up from the Bronx to Mount Vernon. make an easy $500. It could be a steady thing. So I said, okay. I wound up bringing the envelope up, and I walked into police sting operation. 20 cops came out of nowhere, was placed under arrest. I did everything wrong I could do. The guy actually was working with the police. He had 3 sealed indictments. More people he drew in the case, the less time he supposedly was going to get. So I wound up not knowing what I was doing, did everything wrong, and I wound up being sentenced to 15 years to life under the Rockefeller drug laws. I went to Sing Sing Prison in Austin, in New York, where I was lost, didn't know really what to do. And then I discovered my talent as an artist from another prisoner. And that I used as a tool to transcend the negativity around me to find meaning and purpose in my life. So I became a painter. One night in my cell, after 3 years, I picked up a mirror. I looked in the mirror. I saw an individual who's going to spend the most productive years of his life in a cage. And then I picked up a canvas and I painted the self-portrait. I titled it 15 to Life. 7.5 years later, wound up at the Whitney Museum of American Art. While I was in prison, I got a lot of publicity on my case. And about 2.5 years later, Governor George Pataki of New York granted me executive clemency. So I literally painted my way to freedom. Came out, didn't know really what to do with my life. And then one day, I was invited to speak at this center. It was actually a prison for kids, spot for correctional facility. I went there to speak to these 10 to 15-year-old boys and girls, and I walked into the cafeteria, and I was blown away seeing all these young kids in this prison for kids, and that changed my whole life. From that point on, you know, I said, I want to do something about it. I want to save, I mean, if I could save one of these kids' life from not doing walking the road I walked. I want to do this. So then I began my activism, a rescue mission to save those I left behind. I co-founded a group, Mothers of the New York Disappeared, with Randy Credico, the William Constant Fund for Racial Justice. And on May 25th, 1998, it was the 25th anniversary of the Rockefeller drug laws. We staged this rally on 50th Street in Rockefeller Center. And basically we had about 20 people, loved ones from those incarcerated, ex-prisoners, and we started this movement. All New York press showed up, and at that point we said, this is how we're gonna, you know, change the Rockefeller drug laws in New York State by putting a human face on this issue, which was not done before. A lot of people joined us, Al Lewis, Grandpa Al Lewis, politicians, but it took a while. You know, I went to Albany, I was lobbying, and then I found out we weren't going to change the laws from the top down. When I talked to these assemblymen, and, you know, they said, look, I understand these laws are good and this and that, but that was the public view. Behind the closed door, they had a different view. Look, we know these laws don't work, but if we try to stop them, change them, we'll look soft, we'll lose our job. So it was at that point I said, you know, we got to change this, not from the top down, from the bottom up. So we started the street movement. And it took us about 8 years, and we finally changed public opinion, where at that point about 85% of New Yorkers wanted to change the Rockefeller drug laws. Then all the politicians started coming aboard, and it took us a few years, and eventually we got reform of the Rockefeller drug laws in 2003, 2004, and then 2009. We got historic reform under Governor Patterson. So I've been dedicated my life to the issue of fighting the Rockefeller drug wars. And now, in my work at Drug Policy Alliance, it expanded to, you know, around the country, under federal laws. And this is what I do today. I work for DPA with our leader, Ethan Nadelman. It's a great organization. We've got about 75 people, 8 offices around the country. And we tackle the tough issues, and we fight the drug war. So that's how the story started. That's how I got involved with this. I wrote my book. My first memoir was published in 2004 by Ferrell House. And it was called 15 of Life, How I Painted My Way to Freedom. And it was a good book. I got a lot of great endorsements, Susan Sarandon, Russell Simmons, even Andrew Cuomo, Jack Black, Tim Robbins, Frank Serpico, Grandpa Lewis, all great endorsements. And the book was mostly about, that memoir was about my prison experience and how I survived being in prison, serving that 15 life sentence. Now, recently, just last month, I came out with my second memoir called This Side of Freedom, Life After Clemency. And it talks about my life as a free person and what I've been doing for the last 18 years. I wanted to write a book basically talking about my life and using it as a hook, actually, about the issue of reentry for other prisoners. You know, because in the world we live in, recidivism exists. About 70% return within 3 years, but I'm the one of the few that have not returned. So this story is about my life and what I've been doing and trying to change the laws, going on rescue mission, saving those I left behind. And I must say, it was not an easy thing, but I enjoy what I do. Drug Policy Alliance is a great organization, and I work with a bunch of good people who, you know, do the right thing and want to help people. So that's the story now in my life. The new book is just came out, like I said, and basically it's a tale about my life, returning home after 12 years of a 15 to life sentence for a nonviolent drug crime. And basically what I did, I struggled with my freedom because it happened so fast. I got clemency. So the freedom came swiftly. And it wasn't easy. And the new book talks about the trials and the tribulations and, you know, my purpose with my life now is to try to end the drug war, which is a large task to do. But, you know, I think we're getting some leeway, especially now, the tail end of President Obama's administration. You know, he wants to fix a broken system that exists. And hopefully Congress is going to join him. Because right now, when, you know, people come out of prison, they're set up to lose. This is a fact. I've faced this fact. You know, you have all these debilitating rules of law against ex-offenders trying to straighten out their lives. So I hope this book, This Side of Freedom, could help those people that come out and want to re-enter society and become productive citizens.
If you just tuned in, you're listening to Prison Pipeline on KBOO 90.7 FM, KBOO.FM on the web. I'm Doug McVeigh, and we're speaking with Anthony Papa. It's a moving story, and I want to ask you about, I want to talk about both of your books, actually. I just need to make sure I've got this right, because it's one of those things, a lot of people have an image, you know, marijuana offenses, people are finally thinking, okay, maybe that's not a big deal, but anything else, oh, well, that's maybe a different story. But, so, somebody was trying to set up people for the as an informant for the cops in order to try and get a lighter sentence themselves. So they find that you're in a sort of a desperate state, tempt you, and you didn't do it the first time, but then later you're in a much more desperate state, so they finally give you a possible out, and your bad luck.
Yes, that police sting operation.
That's not exactly uncommon, right?
No, it happens a lot. You know, but for me, what my big mistake was, they offered me 3 to life after a year of being out on parole. Being out on, you know, on bail. And to tell the truth, I didn't want to go to prison. You know, I had a wife, I had a 7-year-old daughter. I don't want to leave them. And I decided to go to trial. And that was the biggest mistake ever, because I had no shot from the beginning. Even my lawyer was not a good lawyer. He actually was interested only in the money. And he knew I didn't have a shot in Westchester County. The conviction rate was like 99%. And I remember the first lawyer I had said, look, you're not going to win. Take the 3 to life. You know, and do the time, you come home, and that's it. If you don't, you go 15 to life, you lose, you're going to get 15 years. That's a different story. Well, I was desperate. I didn't want to go to jail. So then I remember meeting through my sister, introduced me to another lawyer. And this lawyer, I went to see him the day I was supposed to tell the court I was going to take the plea offer of 3 to life. I met him in front of the courthouse. He came, drove up with a Jaguar, and on like the $1,000 suit, rolled down the window, get in the car. I had a phone when it was like 1984, when, you know, cell phones didn't exist then. Talking on the phone. He said, oh, excuse me, I got a client. And he starts talking to me. He says, look, go into court, tell them that you need a week. You'll be back with your answer next week. And then tomorrow, come down and gave me a card to my office. So I did that. The judge gave me a week. I went to see him. And, you know, he, by that time, made up this extraordinary alibi. And it sounded so good at the time. And basically, he called my lawyer, fired him on the spot. He became my lawyer. Told me, look, if you take this offer of 3 to life, you know, 5-6 years down the road, you'd be banging your head against the cell door. You know, I had me rubbing my head, actually. You know, like I was banging my head against the cell door. And I said, yeah, all right, it sounded good. And I wound up firing my lawyer and hiring him. And I didn't even have money to pay for his fee. And I wound up having to use my bail receipt, which was $10,000 that my uncle, Frank Papa, put up for me. And I went to trial, and in like 2 days, I blew the trial. And they hit me with 15 years to life. Actually, it was 2 15-year-to-life sentences, one for sale, one for possession of 4.5 ounces of cocaine. When I brought that envelope up from the Bronx to Mount Vernon, they had it posed as tow truck operators. So when I went to give the envelope, the guy opened it, looked in, took the money, he gave me the money, $7,500. My part of the deal, I was going to make $500 and like a gram of cocaine. And he wound up, the two cops in the tow truck, they opened the envelope. All of a sudden, these lights went on in the tow truck, and I'm looking at it. And then I thought it was a stick-up, but I turned to the left to run. All of a sudden, I got 38 in my left ear, went the other way, got another gun in my other ear, thrown on the floor, and that was it. So when I went for sentencing, the judge said, look, I'm going to give you a break since it's your first-time nonviolent drug offender. I'll only give you 1 15-to-life sentence instead of 2. So that was the break. And I wound up going to Sing Sing. You know, there I was lost, didn't know what to do until I met another prisoner who actually taught me how to paint, this guy Indio. One night I was smelling paint dinner, like, and I walked the tiers of the gallery, and I went to this cell, and I looked in the cell, and there was this guy painting, and all in the cell, he had all these paintings. It looked like Rembrandt was in that cell. So he turns around, he saw me, he came out, started asking, why am I looking in his cell? He wanted to fight with me, because one of the rules in prison, you know, you don't stare at anybody's cell. I didn't know this. Because in the beginning of a prison bit, it's the most dangerous part, time, because you don't know how to do time. You know, that's, you learn, if you're lucky enough, people help you to learn to do time. So when you know, I said, no, I don't want to fight with you. All I want is, you know, I think you're a great artist. And, so the guy got a big head. You ever paint before? I said, no. He said, do you want to try it? Gave me some watercolor paper, some brushes, went in my cell, stood up all night, painted the worst painting you ever saw, but it created this energy to create. And that's how I became a painter. And it was there in prison, Sing Sing prison, where I painted hundreds of pieces of work. And literally one day, what happened was I started running the art program there. And because the art teacher, Eddie Claver, died, and we didn't have an art program for about a year. So then finally I wrote to the governor and commissioners and the Senate. And, you know, I tell them, look, we don't have an art program. We want to start with one. I want to get one going. So I got a letter back from Senator Joe Gallagher. He said, well, look, we, you know, because of the budgetary restraints, you know, they stopped, like, closed 66 prison programs, music, art. Why don't you teach the art program? And I said, wow. I said, okay. And I put in for a proposal to the warden, and they granted it. And I started teaching the art program myself. And it was amazing what happened in prison, you know, in this art class. I had room for about 15 people and rotated at, you know, a certain time. 3 weeks, changed another 15. And people came in and it touched their lives in amazing ways. For example, these two rival gang members came to my class. These were two guys that were stabbing each other in the blocks where we lived in Sing Sing. But when they came in my classroom, in a week or two, they were painting each other's portraits. So it was amazing how I saw art as a vehicle, you know, to change people's lives. And this lasted a couple of years until one day I was approached by Dennis Manwaring, the civilian at Sing Sing. That ran a lot of programs. One was the art program. So he came with me to me. He had a letter from the Whitney Museum of American Art. And the letter asked for a piece of art by a prisoner that's at Sing Sing. So he says, you want to try it? I said, sure. When I saw the letter, I said, this is a red flag came up. This is how I'm going to get out of prison. I'm going to paint my way to freedom. People thought I was crazy. And, you know, I had one night in 1988, I picked up this mirror, looked in the mirror, and I saw this individual going to spend the most productive years of his life in a cage, painted the self-portrait titled 15 of Life, and 7.5 years later, wound up at the Whitney Museum of American Art. That's how I wound up getting a lot of publicity on my case. And eventually, George Pataki heard about my case, and I applied for clemency. And 2 years later, that's how I got in prison. You know, literally painting my way to freedom. But when I came out, I started this group, Mothers of New York Disappeared. I became leading activist group, you know, to fight the Rockefeller drug wars. And we saved a lot of lives. Went to Albany many times, you know, met with the Assembly, the Senate, and the governor. And use those personal interest stories as a way for them to put a human face on the issue. So, and then now with this new book, This Side of Freedom, Life After Clemency, which is available on Amazon. It just talks about my experience of working with different people, trying to, you know, fix a broken system. And it's a pretty interesting book. And it's, you know, dedicated to my son, Anthony Papa Jr., and for all those left behind. So hopefully it'll make a difference in somebody's life.
What can people do if they have a loved one inside, if they're inside right now?
Like I said, I started a project about 3 years ago, and it's still going strong. I have, you know, letters from prisoners telling me their stories. If there's any prisoners listening or loved ones of those who have people in prison and they want to tell their story, you could send it to me at, you know, the Drug Policy Alliance. It's Tony Papa at 131 West 33rd Street, New York, New York, 10001, 15th floor. And attention, drug war stories. And what I did is I created a database, media database, where I put those stories in a database. I actually use it if reporters call and they need a story of a certain kind of drug or a certain kind of, you know, individual. I look into my files and I hook up the reporter. And we DPA is happy to help to get your story out there if we can and help you, you know, put a human face on your story, which I think is needed, especially now where Obama in his last stretch, you know, he's trying to fix this broken system. He's given out a lot of clemencies, I think over 450 at this point. And so people do apply for clemencies. My hope is now from his giving out these clemencies, pardon power, clemency power is going to be used more by actual now governors. Hopefully governors follow the lead of Obama granting these clemencies. And then at one point, hopefully Congress is going to get it and Congress is going to join, you know, trying to fix this broken system and, you know, let people who are doing tremendous amounts of time for drugs, life sentences for marijuana, cocaine, heroin, you know, people with long draconian sentences that have served a lot of time, give them breaks and let them home, be home, you know, with their loved ones. So that's what they can do. Write me at the Drug Policy Alliance.
That was my interview with Tony Papa, an artist, writer, freedom fighter, noted advocate against the war on drugs. Tony is the author of This Side of Freedom, Life After Clemency, his second memoir, about his 18 years of freedom since being granted clemency and released from prison. This Side of Freedom is an e-book, available in electronic format. Very modern, but not easily accessible for some people. For example, people in correctional facilities who might find inspiration in Tony's story, his perseverance, and his success since leaving prison. I heard from Tony while I was editing this interview and learned that he plans to do something about that. Tony plans to print hundreds of copies of This Side of Freedom to be distributed and donated to prison libraries across the United States. In fact, Deer Ridge Correctional Facility here in Oregon has already accepted an order for 8 print copies once they're available. Tony started a Kickstarter project to raise funds for this. You can find more information about the project, the book, and Tony at his website, which is 15yearstolife.com. That's 15yearstolife.com. You can listen to this and previous installments of Prison Pipeline at kboo.fm/prisonpipeline. Prison Pipeline has a Facebook page. Please give it a like. My thanks to our guest, Anthony Papa. Thanks also to our engineers, Danielle and Mike. And of course, thank you, dear listener, for tuning in. I'm Doug McVeigh. Good night.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Abrupt Climate Change. I talk with Dr. Guy McPherson. Monday, August 8th at 6:30 p.m. at the Waypost in Portland. Dr. Guy McPherson is a professor of conservation biology and an author. He'll present his synthesis of the current peer-reviewed research on Earth's recent phase of rapid warming. Again, that's abrupt climate change. A talk with Dr. Guy McPherson, Monday, August 8th at 6:30 p.m. at the Waypost, 3120 North Williams Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
The time is 7 p.m. You're listening to KBOO Portland. Coming up next, it's Hard Knock Radio.
One, two, three, four.
Y'all ready for this?
Ladies and gentlemen.
94.1
KBOO. What you see here is history. It's history. Never been done before. Never been done in this country. In this country.
KPFA.
To bring you to the light.
Farewell to you, people.
Up next on the program, we look at sex verification in the Olympics.